welcome to another brand new episode of the Modern SaaS Podcast. And this is me, your host, Yark. If you're in the world of sales, today's topic is going to be super interesting for you. We are going to talk about how to win a competitive deal. And to discuss a heavy topic like that, I've got a hegemon from the house. We have our VP of sales, Nate, joining on the show, and he's here after quite a while. So how are you feeling, Nate, today?
I am feeling good. We're getting towards the end of our month and end of our quarter, and deals are getting competitive. We're doing our best to win them.
All right. Looks like I have you at the right time, right? So when you are working on a competitive deal, one of the first things that I have in my mind is probably the entire approach is going to change. Let's talk about maybe different players one by one. Let's start with discovery. What happens in a discovery call, whether at a time when somebody comes in who does not know your space and you're educating them, versus somebody who comes in as a competitive deal, who knows who your competitors are, who know what you do? How are the approaches different there?
That's a great question. And Yag, I'll tell you that there are a lot of sales leaders that believe that competitive deals are won or lost in the discovery stage, just because there's so many different pieces of understanding that have to take place that create a framework that we build off of to actually successfully win a deal. And you're right, there are two different types of deals that come to you. There's a deal where somebody is learning about the space. Maybe you've done outbounding or prospecting, and you have to educate somebody on the space and your product and the competitors. And then on the flip side, there is a competitive deal where somebody has done a lot of their research and knows exactly what you want and wants to figure out if you're the right solution. And in each of those scenarios, it can get very competitive. And the approach is a little bit different in the way that you can win them. And I want to talk a little bit about both of those, but first, I need to talk about controlling the narrative, which is the most important thing in a discovery call. What I mean by controlling the narrative is taking control of the conversation without making it seem to the prospect like you're taking control of the conversation. If you don't, then you run into what I call fetch mode. And it doesn't matter what type of deal this is. The last thing you want to do is be playing fetch with your prospect, where they ask you a question and then you go answer it. They ask you a question and you go answer it. So one of the first things I'll say before I talk about somebody who's brand new to the space or somebody who's coming in knowing a lot about it and having done the research is we have to control the narrative. And what that means for me is I train my reps. The minute they get on the call, they need to explain to the prospect what the purpose is of the call. And then they need to immediately talk about the agenda of what's going to take place on that call to accomplish that purpose. And then after they've talked about the agenda, they recommend, if the call goes well, what the next step would be. And then they pause for a second and they get the prospects to agree that A, that's the purpose and the right agenda, or they can add to it, and B, yes, that's an ideal next step or it's not. And what this controlling the narrative framework does at the beginning of the call is it sets you up to have an objective of what you want to accomplish, which is the purpose. It gives the rep the outline that they can stay to, which is the agenda. And it plants a seed in the prospect's head of this is an ideal next step of what we're going to do if this call goes well, right? And so they end up thinking about that throughout the whole call. And it works really well to let the rep control that conversation. And then that way, if the conversation deviates too far from the agenda, the rep can pull them back in. And there's been this framework of guardrails set up and protected so that we can focus on what really matters and drive ultimately to the next step, which one of the things I tell my reps frequently is if you do not have a next step, you don't have a deal, right? We need to get that concrete next step in place. So first and foremost, it doesn't matter what type of call it is, we have to control the narrative of that. Now, if for example, we've been doing outbound and we've got somebody on the phone who doesn't know anything about our space or what we do, that approach is very much a consultative, let me teach you, let me help you understand what things look like. And we're not doing a lot of heavy selling. We're doing a lot of informational sharing, but we're also gathering information to understand what are their key business metrics and what will make them successful. And then we want to use a strategy of aligning our software and our value proposition to what their business is looking to accomplish in the current state and the future state. And let me tell you, this type of approach is not feature function focused, right? We're staying away from it. We're talking business focused, right? What are your objectives? How do we get there? And that's kind of the strategy for an outbounding. For an incoming competitive deal, one of the things that we want to understand is, why haven't you already selected a vendor, right? And there, every software company has their 800-pound gorilla software and a lot of other really strong softwares that do well in the space. And one of the things that we want to understand is, you're talking to us, you came to us, why haven't you already purchased somebody else? What is keeping you from doing that? A, we want to identify, are we just column fodder to the 800-pound gorilla in the room? Or is there something about our software that you legitimately like? And we need to understand that. Okay. So we want to understand that. One, why haven't you already purchased something? And then the next thing is, why now? What has changed in your business, or who is pushing this initiative that it has to happen now? And then thirdly is, we want to establish what the evaluation process is, right? It's like, think of a sports competition. If I'm going into a sports competition and I'm competing against a bunch of other different teams, I want to understand, what are the rules of the sport and what are the rules of the tournament? And we need to lay those out very clear, and I need to make sure that everybody's playing by the rules. My son plays soccer, and when we go to tournaments, sometimes there's really big players that compete against him that are really good, and I think they're too old. I'm convinced that this 9-year-old kid is actually 16, and he pulled up and parked his car next to mine when he got to the tournament. And the thing is I want to check with the refs and make sure, hey, is this kid actually, is he young enough to play in this game? And sometimes we need to do the exact same thing when we compete in software. We need to understand, what are the rules of the game? Who are the executives that are going to be on all the calls, right? So if I've got an executive of sales that's attending the 800-pound gorilla demo, I need to make sure he's on my call too. And so we want to understand, what are the guidelines around the evaluation process? And then from there, we get into understanding, okay, now that we have the framework of what that evaluation process looks like, let's identify actually what the success metrics are, meaning, what are the specific points you're evaluating? And we'll get into that a little bit more in this call, but that's how we set up a framework of a successful competitive scenario.
That's amazing. You know, I absolutely love it. There are so many aspects that I can dive into one by one, but one of the first things that caught my mind is, let's say when somebody's coming into the conversation knowing who you are and who the other people are, do you generally come in with a mindset that, hey, these are the criteria that I'm looking for? How do you, when you establish the process, you know, let's talk a little bit more deeper there. What is that you try to understand? Do you try to understand what is important for them? What are they evaluating you on? Or is it more about, hey, how does this go from stage A to stage B?
That's a good question. And I think it's both. It's, what is your evaluation process? Because as a sales rep, I want to know, are they even thinking about how they're evaluating the software? Or are they just going to get priced from three different vendors and make a decision? And so it's helpful if they've thought about, hey, we're going to do a demo with three different vendors. Then we're going to meet internally. And then we're going to pick two vendors. We're going to do another demo and dive deeper and add people to the call. And then we're going to work on the commercials and terms, right? It's this thought out process that makes me think, okay, they've thought about this. And if that is their process, I know how to strategically approach each stage of that process to ensure a win. Because remember, when we're looking at a competitive sales cycle, it's about successfully getting to the next step and winning the battle to eventually win the war. Whereas if I ask somebody, hey, what's your process to evaluate? And they're like, well, I don't know. I'm looking at the demo. Then that's a really good opportunity as me as a seller to say, hey, well, let's talk about what this evaluation process actually looks like. How are you going to get to a decision? Who has to get involved? And help them build that framework, because then they'll view me as a trusted advisor, because I'm helping them build out the appropriate way to evaluate a software.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. And from there, you know, so what are the parameters that typically come into play when the conversation goes? Because the reason I'm asking you this is that, let's say, there are three or four players and I have an evaluation sheet in front of me. Now, it is not going to be features all the time, although feature parity is important. But how do you make sure that what in that point is going to move the needle for you?
There may be sales leaders out there that don't agree with this, but I'm still a big believer that if you remove feature functionality, and if you remove the politics of and networks that people may have with certain companies, people want to buy from people they trust and like. at the end of the day, right? The salesperson becomes a representative of the company and the product. And they need to facilitate and they need to build that trust to make them feel comfortable. And the best way to do that is to become a trusted advisor, right? Not to be looked at as just another salesperson, but to be looked at somebody that genuinely cares about the prospect's business initiatives and goals, but also their personal initiatives and goals and how they're going to look internally if they were to bring this software on. Are they going to be a hero or are they going to be a failure, right? And so there's a couple of different layers that you have to think through beyond just feature functionality and am I competing in some sort of political fashion? It's how do I earn the trust and respect and bring value to every conversation? In fact, one of the things we've been talking a lot about internally at Avoma, being a product-led growth company, is because all of our prospects can go get so much information off of our website and they get so much information doing a trial. Every time they engage with a salesperson, we need to make sure that we're bringing more value to that conversation than our website or our trial can. And that's part of really becoming a trusted advisor, is making sure that every touch point has relevance and value.
Right. That, that gives me a lot of insight as a marketer as well. You know, one of the first things that I often do is like when I listen to these conversations and I get these questions that prospects are asking the salespeople or the way customers ask our CS people, and I'm like, hey, this information should be on the website. Why is it not? You know, and then I start building my content around that. Okay, let's now also start looking at success metrics, right? So what do you mean by success metrics here? And how does it play a role in defining the way you take the narrative forward from the beginning to end?
Oh man, success metrics are so important. Any company that has a product that can be trialed, you have to implement the success metrics approach. And what this is if somebody, for example, goes to Avoma and downloads our trial and just starts going through it, playing with it, they have no structure to what they're really looking at. They're testing it, but they don't know how they're testing it. One of the things that we do on the sales team that can be so valuable is we say, hey, wait a second, what are you trying to accomplish really with this trial? And let's identify 3 to 5 aspects of the trial that are going to make you successful. And by that, I mean, can actually move the needle inside of your business. And then let's forget about everything else with the software, but let's focus on those key success metrics and actually see if we can accomplish them. It's the idea of identifying how they can be valuable in the trial by identifying what pieces of the software can impact and move the needle inside of their business. Otherwise, if they don't have success metrics, they're really just pointing and clicking and wondering how something works.
So when you say this, the impact, what does that impact mean? Is it like, what are the goals that they're trying to accomplish? Or is it something like, hey, how valuable is my product? Is it a must have versus a good to have? What does that impact really mean there?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So let me peel back the layers a little bit. With our product, with Avoma, we have a conversational intelligence tool. And one of the things we often hear from sales leaders when they're downloading our product is, I want to see if it can do coaching. And a lot of sales reps will say, okay, well, let's show you in the trial how you can coach. But the real question to ask is, well, what do you mean by coaching? How are you coaching now? How do you define coaching? How are you holding your reps accountable? Are you following a methodology, right? It's digging deep into that specific requirement to understand at the end of the day how they're doing it now and what isn't working. And what their future state or ideal state is, and how they define success, right? And it's when they articulate to you, this is how we define success, then we can help them in the trial implement the right functionality that gets them the outcome they want, right? Imagine for a second hopping into a trial and thinking, okay, I need to be better at coaching, and so I download Avoma and I just start clicking around trying to figure out, okay, I can look at a call transcription, that's great, okay, I can talk about that. And you've got nobody to really guide you to, hey, this is how our VP of sales actually coaches on this software. Or here's how our most successful customers coach using Avoma, right? There's a difference between a guided experience of getting them to a place where they can feel successful in a trial and leaving them alone. Think about any software that you first use. I remember decades ago when I first used an iPhone, right? Nowadays, an iPhone is very easy to use. But I remember when I was transitioning from like a BlackBerry to an iPhone. On a BlackBerry, there was a button that I would press to make a phone call. And when I first got my iPhone, I couldn't figure out how to make the phone call because you had to press the green call button on the screen, right? So it took me a while to figure out because it was a new interface. And that's a basic example, but think about the types of interfaces that we engage with through software. Every interface we have to learn to use differently. If somebody doesn't sit down with us and identify, what do you want to do with this? And then let me show you how you can be successful. Then I have to learn on my own. And as a salesperson, you're creating risk in a deal by letting somebody figure it out by themselves, as opposed to understanding, what do you want to accomplish? What defines success? And let me show you how to get there, right? So if the caller's on the phone, think for a second about one of the last softwares that was new to you that you experienced. Was it a good experience? Maybe you're extremely intelligent and it was really, really easy. Or was it a mediocre experience just because the user interface was brand new to you? Kind of similar to my iOS experience with the Apple phone. But it's important when somebody trials your software that they're only going to spend 2 weeks on it. And if they don't enjoy the experience in the first day or two and you haven't helped them figure out how to be successful based off of their success criteria, then you add additional risk to the deal that you didn't need to introduce.
Right. You know, one key takeaway from whatever you said is the key aspect in what you explained is more on the curiosity side. Because every time somebody comes to me and says, yeah, how does Avoma work to do this? I would often jump off to share screen and say that, hey, you click here, you go here, this is how you do it, and these are the things that are available. But when you say this, it makes sense that, hey, let me first understand what are they trying to accomplish. Maybe there's a better way of doing it. Maybe, instead of the feature they're asking for, I can show you a simpler way of accomplishing with what exists. Now, when I pull this back, there's one final thing that I would want to ask, which I'm really, really curious about. Let's say, you're in a space like CRM, where, there are so many players and the feature parity is almost the same. And then, say, for some reason, they have, come up with a list saying that, hey, these are the final two tools that I'm going to compare with. And it's you versus somebody else. Now, what are the things that we can do as an AE or an SDR to make sure that, hey, we have the trust won in that part? Because at the end of the day, it's just going to be, as you rightly mentioned, it's about the trust that we have established during the process. And if they like us, there are the basic features are once done, then these are the factors that really matter.
So if we say, hey, we're looking at two CRMs, they're the exact same, functionality or very similar, each has its pros and cons that weighs out. How do we competitively win this deal? I am a big believer in humanizing the conversation to become the trusted advisor. And what I mean by humanize is honesty and transparency, right? Communicating, hey, this is what we can do for you, but this is what we cannot do for you. And when you share with somebody what you can't do, there's a feeling of trust that's created, right? Because you're being vulnerable with what you can't do and they appreciate it. An example I'll give is anybody who uses Amazon Prime, when we look at a product and we go to the reviews, right? Because the reviews are so important to us. What are other people saying? But in our minds, we discount the 5-star reviews because we think that that's marketing. And we discount the 1-star reviews because we think that that is people trying to slander the product. And so we look at probably, the 3, the 2.5, the 3.5 star reviews. And the reason we do that because we feel like we're getting the most accurate and honest assessment of the product. Because you can't tell me that your software is perfect, does everything that I want it to do, plus we'll go do my grocery shopping. It's just, that's just not realistic, right? What we need to know is what can it do, but also tell me what it can't do. And let me know ahead of time what those problems or challenges are with what it can't do so that I can properly prepare for it. In fact, you help me prepare for what it can't do. How do I get around that? So if you're apples to apples, but you humanize the conversation, say, hey, look, based on your requirements, we're going to do these things really well, but these are the areas we're going to struggle. And here's how we can support and help you get around that. You're instilling this trust, this collaboration, and this partnership and humanizing the conversation with with your prospect. It's going to help you get more information from them as the deal continues. And at that point in the deal cycle, when you're neck and neck, it's all about how much information can I extract in order to provide value back. And if you don't have the ability to pull that information out of your prospect, then you're putting yourself at risk. So it's how can I make that connection? How can I humanize? How can I get as much information as possible? Because at the end of the day in sales, information is power. It's what helps you win deals.
And I also really enjoyed how you said 5-star ratings is all about marketing. That made me smile. And absolutely right. Right. So you want to make sure that everything that we see is believable at that point. And we want to make sure that, you know, we can make some decision. Everything is not going to be green. And for me, let me know if my holistic takeaway of understanding this entire process is right, or if I'm missing something here. So the first thing where you started is you said it's all about making that discovery unique into this competitive situation. It's going to be very different from how it is, say, in net new scenario where you're taking a consultative approach and educating the market versus somebody who knows. You're trying to understand, hey, what is that you're looking for? What are you trying to accomplish? Then setting up the process and making sure that, all right, so step one, we do this, then step two, we go through here, and if all goes well, then we take it to the negotiation. From there, we schedule this next meeting, so on and so forth. And then finally, we get into some sort of, understanding that success metric and saying that, hey, this is what is important to you. And then if we hit all these things, then we are on parity. And finally, the things that move the needle. So did I miss anything here?
No, I think you've hit everything on the head. And the reality is we could probably spend a whole podcast on discovery. We could spend a whole podcast on controlling the narrative, on evaluation, on success metrics, on moving the needle. I think in this call, we kind of just scratched the surface of some of the things that can be done to become more competitive. But for the listeners out there, I will say that there is no silver bullet. Right, there are so many variables and factors that come into competitive cycles. But see, these are some of the things that I've seen over a 20-plus year sales career that can help you put you in a better position strategically to control and potentially win a more competitive deal.
Right, and for any listener who is a new AE getting into their role and getting into a competitive deal for the first time, what are your words of wisdom as you, as we begin to close this?
Yeah, my words of wisdom are, don't be a ninja bullet seller. And what I mean by that is don't sell the world, right? Be honest about what your product can and cannot do. Go educate yourself on your software. Go educate yourself on your customers and how they use it, what they like and what they don't like. And then be transparent with your prospects and with the people you work with, because that transparency builds so much credibility in sales cycles. I can't tell you how many, 6 or 7 figure deals as an enterprise rep I've personally won in my career just by being willing to be honest and telling a prospect, hey, we can't do that, right? And so it's really, business is personal. It's about the relationships that get created, and you can build such good relationships as a seller with people that will continue to work with you throughout your whole career if you're willing to be transparent and honest and build a strong relationship and foundation of trust with them.
You know, love it. For all the people that say it's just business, you said business is personal. I think that's a great place to close this episode. And thank you so much, Nate, for joining us and giving you valuable insights. This means a lot.
Thank you, Yag. It's my pleasure.
Awesome. And for all the listeners out there, that's that from us in this episode. And until we connect with you the next time with another topic and another good guest, this is bye from us. Have a good day and take care.